Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power, or should I say spook power. That's right. We're going to be talking about ghosts, legends, myths, lore, well, just all kinds of fascinating information. But what is it going to be about, and where is all of this fascinating information going to be related to or going to be associated with? Well, I'll tell you what. My guest, Ashley Rooney, we are going to be talking about Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. And, oh, my goodness, it's just filled with all kinds of stories. And, Ashley, I want to welcome you to the show.
Why, thank you.
Now, Ashley, you and an associate decided you were going to put this together. And I know that you are deeply involved in architecture. You've been writing, oh my goodness, for so many years. You've done novels. You have written columns for newspapers. How did you and Betsy Johnston get together? And why is it you decided to put this, well, very, very informative and fascinating book, Washington, D.C., Ghosts, Legends, and Lore, together?
Well, I have been writing ghost stories for a while, and Betsy is my beloved first cousin.
Oh, my.
She knew Washington very, very well, and I had been sent down there from Connecticut as a little girl. So I, as a little girl, I would wander through the basements of the Sheraton Park Hotel, much to my mother's horror when she found out about it, and wander through all those grand institutions. So I knew it from a little girl's perspective and all the spooky parts. And Betsy knew the city, and she wanted to try her hand at writing, so she wrote some of the stories, and I wrote some of the stories, and we pulled the book together. It has been a big seller. A lot of the schools are using it because both of us research and don't want just ghost stories that just go, you know, have things pop out in the middle of the night, but have some basis. You have some understanding of where all this is coming from. Because the unknown is so strange in its own right, but there's a reason why spirits are still with us often. There's a history back there, and it's trying to uncover some of that history and make for this supernatural happenings a little more, understandable, I guess.
Well, I know that many times there are these stories. And unless someone was literate in so much of the history that you have in the book about Washington, D.C., which I think is just absolutely amazing, there is so much detail regarding the era, the time. And it's so easy for people in the modern world to say, make judgments and say, well, this should be this way and that should be that way, without realizing that every generation lives its own particular patternings. And when we're looking at many of these aspects of history, there were none of the modern conveniences. People, sometimes it took years for them to communicate one person with another. And I really love the history that's in here. I'd like to start out chatting about the old stone house. Now, it's the very first story in your book, and it had... Oh, it was, in a way, it was such a heartbreaking story about a man, Christopher, and his beloved wife, Rachel. But give us the time frame on this, and tell us about this, because this is one of the oldest houses, isn't it, in Washington, D.C.?
Yes, and this is a story my cousin Betsy wrote, and it takes place in the 1760s. So you're talking way back before the Revolutionary War and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And this family, this young family, they built themselves this stone house in Washington. And it was a grand thing to move in those days. People didn't really do it. You know, usually you stayed with your one plot of land and you stayed in your town and you never took off. But in this case, this young family did it. They were, like many Americans, a little later on, following Daniel Boone, Roosevelt, Daniel Boone, who went further out west, they went to Washington and thought this would be perfect. But they ran into, those days there was a lot of fever, malaria probably, and yellow fever, and Rachel lost her family, and they died.
And the story, what I was so amazed with in the story is that it's like you're right there. You're living that moment with this family. I think Betsy, since she's the one that wrote it, did an incredibly fine job of expressing the feelings and emotions of a young mother and her distress over moving because all of her family was around her, yet her husband, Christopher, was such a skilled artisan with wood. He made furniture. He did all kinds of things. And then he goes down to the wharf. He takes his children, goes down to the wharf. And like you said, at that time, the fever, yellow fever, you know, just all kinds of things, typhoid, diphtheria, all of these diseases that relatively few people, including physicians today, have ever had an experience with, and lack of sanitation, and in a heavily crowded area, and they get the fever, whichever one it was, and she's left all alone. And as a woman, she didn't have anything to be able to go into because all she had was her family, and that family was gone.
Right.
And it's just a powerful story. Now, the Stone House, this is a place that people can go to and check out and see. And you also, in that story, bring out some fascinating history. You talk about how the General Assembly, and this was in Maryland, established a formal system of tobacco inspection and quality control. Now, I think if there were a student in a classroom reading that one sentence, they would go, what? I mean, it just doesn't strike them that people at that time would have to do something like that. But they had problems just like we have today with making sure that your products, whatever you're getting, is the right thing.
Right. All right. And they were worrying about, after all, when you think of the imports and the exports, that's how they were making their money. They were selling all this to England. And you had to have lots of controls. But yes, the old stone house is now administered, to go back to what you said originally, by the National Park Service. And it's open for tours and all that. And supposedly it does have its ghost, a particularly unfriendly male spirit who's quite angry. And it could very well be Christopher, Rachel's husband, who worked so tirelessly to build a comfortable life for his family and was wrenched from that life at the very moment where he seemed to have found success in the new land that he brought his family. Perhaps he was still angry about what happened to his life. Perhaps that's why he rattles around the house, causes doors to slam and items to fall off the shelves. Anyway, so there's this tiny stone house, quite haunted. There are other ghosts that people have felt there, too.
Well, let's talk about another National Trust historic site, which is situated at 1610 H Street, right across the street from the White House. It's called the Decatur House. And a touch of history relative to this story is that privateering was going on. It was at that time 20% of the United States government annual revenues by 1800. This just to me is so fascinating. Tell us about this house and about the naval hero Stephen Decatur and his wife Susan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my. I mean, you remember the days when you used to read pirate stories and everything else? I mean, and this guy was the good guy who really helped the United States through all this very difficult period. Stephen Decatur was a very famous naval man in our history, in the country. During the early years of this country, the places like Tripoli and Algeria and so forth, it would send out pirates, and they would go out and they would take all the ships and everything else. Well, Stephen Decatur was a young naval officer, and he became known for his heroic deeds on the quarterdeck. And one night, he, as a mere lieutenant, he took 10 U.S. sailors and conducted a night raid right under the enemy's guns. He glided his ship into the Tripoli's harbor, where they set fire to the captured U.S. frigate Philadelphia, preventing her use by the enemy. And everybody throughout the world applauded his audacious destruction of the Philadelphia in order to keep it out of the hands of the barbarians. Lord Nelson of England supposedly said it was one of the boldest acts that happened in those years. Anyway, his heroic act changed his life forever. There he was, a young lieutenant, but everybody knew him. He was a hero. Little boys would reenact the burning of the Philadelphia and argue about who would play his role. So at age 25, he was promoted to captain. And then later, he had more battles with the pirates, and everybody knew that this was the man who was going to save them. You know, he had a big fight with a Turkish captain, and he was able to flip him over and seize the knife that was gripping the hand that was gripping the knife that was going to kill him and shoot the guy. Anyway, he made port in Hampton Roads, Virginia, and there he met a beautiful woman, and they were both very smitten with each other. And they decided, they were very ambitious, Stephen and his wife Susan. They had what was termed a whirlwind courtship, and they married in Norfolk. And during that early years, many, many people arranged elegant and sumptuous dinners in honor of Stephen. At one, there were 13 toasts. He was the most popular man around, and you could see where people might have been envious of him, which did happen.
Mm-hmm.
There was a major incident with another British ship, and another captain who Stephen had once admired, it gets a little complicated here, I'm sort of summarizing this part of the history, surrendered that ship to the British, which was considered very wrong. Instead of surrendering, you were really supposed to fight off. And there was a general court-martial and of this Commodore James Barron, who was one of the most senior Navy officers. And Stephen had to sit on that. And the court found Barron guilty, but only suspended him from all command in the U.S. Navy for 5 years. And, of course, Barron was shocked and outraged. I mean, he was a senior officer. Stephen was nothing but a young man, and all this had happened and so forth. Anyway, over the next couple of years, Stephen moved up and up and up, and the two of them built this lovely house in Washington. They had a lot of money. They were building this gorgeous house. They got Latrobe, who was the one who did the White House, to build it. It was just a wonderful time. Even though, you know, by the late spring of 1813, Britain had blockaded all the important ports from New York to the southern states, and Stephen got stymied up in New London. But things went on, and there was another war with Algiers, and everything kept happening. But he had an enemy in Mr. Barron.
Mm-hmm.
His life may have been wonderful. He may have been the hero, but he had made Mr. Barron furious. And finally, one day, Barron challenged him to a duel. Now, duels were wrong in those days. But somebody decided to act as a second, and Stephen was wounded mortally. He was brought back to the house, and after 12 hours of suffering, he died at age 41. Mm-hmm. He had defended his honor by entering into a duel, and he had died for that. People throughout the country wept for him. No charges were ever pressed. No questions were asked. 10,000 people supposedly attended that funeral. Everybody thought they had lost one of the Hercules of the age at that point. When he died, his career was far from over, but he was gone. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, when he died, he left an estate worth not all that much and one lovely house, which they had lived in for just 14 months. Susan found it hard to make ends meet, and so she kept begging people for money. You know, she sold some of her china and silver to Jackson, I believe, and she was forced to move to Georgetown and rent out her beautiful house to a series of Washington officials, and over the years, various ambassadors rented it. The house was sold in 1836, and she retired to a convent.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the end. James Barron was recovered and was reinstated to naval service in 1824. And, you know, there's the house. It's haunted by her weeping for Stephen. It's haunted by a hero who died too early. And you wonder what you do. I think the story for modern day life, and so many of these ghost stories, like even parables in the Bible, have analogies for us today. How do you prevent other people from envying you when you've mm-hmm. risen to the top of your business, of your world, of your school class? How do you keep people from envying you and wanting to bring you down?
I don't know that that's ever going to be resolved, just because of the nature of the human character.
Yeah, but it's something we all should be aware of.
We just have to be alert and aware. One of the things that, again, absolutely is marvelous, and you mentioned at the beginning when we were starting our conversation that there's a lot of schools that are interested in this. I think the way the stories are written, and there is so much substance to these stories, the time for the research to be able to integrate one's thinking into the time frame. It's
right,
very hard, I think, for the average person to step back in time and immerse yourself. And one of the sections in your book that was extremely moving to me was about, and it's your chapter, Strangers in an Unknown World. It's about slavery. And you have so much good information, and I wanted to just share some little bit of segments from it, because not only did you write about slavery, but you brought out the point. You have a one page dedicated to what I'd call a very brief summary of slavery. And of course, we all know the African slaves that were brought over, but slavery goes back centuries and centuries and centuries, long before the Europeans caught on to whatever could be a money-making proposition for them. And you go back into the information about how even in Africa, among the different tribes, they would buy and sell people. There would be raids to kidnap the women or the children or the men to do work. I mean, this is an appalling condition. It still goes on today in different parts of the world, and it's more or less underground to a degree, but it has existed among people, I think, for almost as long as people have been around. And you talk about how certain African tribes were known for their dealings in slavery, and then how the Europeans come in, and your numbers were just really, really interesting, because you really did your homework. You said there were approximately 50 million Africans that, via records, that, to the best of our knowledge, were enslaved. And, of course, a good 50% or more didn't make it because the conditions for transporting them were just appalling, and that there were less than 10 million that actually of the 50 million. And there were records that were kept in all of this because this was a business. They had to have accountability so that they could mark their profits. And the involvement of Britain, of course, the Dutch were involved with it. The Arabs had been doing slavery for a long time. This history, I think, is so vital because too often people have a myopic eye regarding this. And when I say that, they just look at a little portion of history. They don't see how far back things go. And you've done a marvelous job. You and your cousin have just done a phenomenal job at bringing forth this information. And the story is just absolutely heartbreaking. Now, did you both participate in putting this story together and doing the research on this?
No. That was mine. We both read each other's works and so forth, but this was very much mine. And my editor agrees with me, and I thank you for the compliment. She said you should turn that one into a novel. I dreamt, I was wallowing in this. You know, I sort of wandered around in another little world while I was writing it. I was so horrified to think Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, was the home of slave pens.
Mm-hmm.
And no one had ever told me that. That was not something I knew as a little girl on all my trips to Washington, nor had my cousin really known it. And, I mean, they're gone now, and there's not much mark left from them. But the Roby Slave Pen operated where the Federal Aviation Administration building now stands.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't it amazing to think as something as base and as evil as a slave pen is now covered by aviation building, which is brings you into the air and you fly.
Mm-hmm.
And you escape all the horrors of that existence.
I think it's so important that at this time in history, we have people like yourself and like Betsy that really are taking the time to do the homework. And there's not an agenda saying, well, we've got to make it so that this is going to make everything look hunky-dory. I think that this is marvelous because the average person in the United States doesn't really know much about history. And it's not something that has been promoted very much in the educational system. And here we are in this era where because of technology, we are able to have access to a lot of information. And so many times people have members of their family that have historical information to share. And when you can document that and you can write it out and it's someplace, I've got a girlfriend that's doing that with her own family right now, and it's just incredible what she's been able to discover. But she's one of how many people in her family? I have no idea. It's a huge family, which she's discovered. But there aren't many people that are able to go back in that history, and it really is important. It's something that's just so vital. Before we close out, I want to talk about someone that, well, is acknowledged as being a very special person. There's the pros and cons of who he was. But Abraham Lincoln, have a fascinating chapter on him, and I loved the section of the story relating to Abraham Lincoln about the First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt using the Lincoln bedroom as her study while her husband was president, and she was always aware of someone watching her. And I thought, wow. And she said she would actually hear Fala, Roosevelt's dog. And, of course, anybody that has a Scotty, they have to be super special because we just love, we have a passion for Scotties in our house. And Fala is heard. So Fala's still roaming the grounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the whole Lincoln, to me, and I like history and I read a lot, but I did not realize that Abraham Lincoln was so sensitive and almost psychic.
Yes, he was.
I was very startled. We've heard a lot about Mary Lincoln and her problems, but no one ever mentioned this, that he dreamed and he foresaw his death. Mm-hmm. And he knew things would happen and that he would foresee the ends of battle and so forth. So you could see why he still wanders the White House, because he still has unfinished business. I mean, he left just as he was bringing the world back together, as they knew it then. And how ironic that he died on the anniversary of the bombardment of Fort Sumter, which was the day the Civil War was declared. I mean, it's almost like there was another hand in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see why he is so sensitive. I mean, I was amazed at the research that has been done. A lot of people have looked into his prescience of knowing things were going to happen. The fact that when he actually won the election, the first election, that he lay down on the sofa and facing a large bureau with a mirror, and then he suddenly saw a double image of himself. It was this. He had two noses. And one of the faces, he said to Mary later, was full of health, and the other was pale and pallid. And when he looked more closely, he thought the mirror pretended that something awful was going to happen. And then he told Mary, who was a strong believer in the spirit world, and she said it was a sign that he was to be elected to a second term of office, and that the paleness of one of his faces was an omen that he would die during his second term in office. Now, certainly, Mary Lincoln was never a very positive woman, and she had very many unhappy things happen to her. But how did she know that? How did she foresee that? You know, I was doing a ghost lecture yesterday, and it's amazing when people talked about their psychic and feeling things and stuff. To know that someone's going to die and that she guessed that he was going to die during his second term in office and she was right is unbelievable to me.
Well, it's when you think about that, just that point, and if you read about Mary Lincoln and her different perspective on things, her fears, sometimes when people are highly sensitive, then they have a distortion about things because they're sort of caught between two worlds. They don't know how to balance them. And that may well have been part of her problem. And, of course, with Lincoln, that he was very much a strong believer in seances, and it was a long time before anybody, there was a special medium that came to his house. Well, for those of you listening, if you're intrigued with history, if you would love to know more about our nation's history, the capital, Washington, D.C., I think that you would find this book, Washington, D.C., Ghosts, Legends, and Lore, absolutely enthralling, because it talks about real history. This isn't fabricated. There's all kinds of references and materials that you could research on your own. And these two ladies, Ashley Rooney and Betsy Johnston, have done an incredible job, especially the way that they present the stories about real people that lived a long time ago. Tragedy with some, happiness with some, but more than anything else, the ghostly apparitions that still exist trying to tell their story. Ashley Rooney, what's your website that people can go to so they can find out more?
I don't have one. I have to get one of these days.
Well, they can
people
find
can look at the books on Barnes & Noble or Amazon. And thank you so much, Donna.
Oh, you're welcome, Ashley. Thank you for being my guest, and for those of you that like to hear the real thing or read it, by golly, check out Washington, D.C., Ghosts, Legends, and Lore. Fascinating stuff. Good for good conversations, especially with upcoming holiday like Halloween. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away. More good things to share.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back, and I'm so delighted you've been able to join me today. I'm broadcasting in Anchorage, Alaska, where the mountains are covered with snow. Looks like somebody's taken a big batch of confectionery sugar and just taken a sifter and put it all over the mountains, and it's absolutely beautiful. It's brisk. Skies are clear. The temperatures are inviting. And they are just letting us know that before we know it, that winter, well, the winter Wonder Man is going to be coming through, baptizing the entire area with really, really cold temperatures. But I'm so delighted to be here, and I have enjoyed so many people that I have interacted with on this trip. This is a very special area of the country, and if ever you have a chance to come up to Alaska, you really should, because it has a magic, I'll tell you. Just make sure you dress for the weather. You know, we were talking about ghosts and Lincoln and dreams bringing information, prophetic information. Well, what if you could dream a winning lottery number? Do you think that's possible? Well, it actually is. And some people have learned how to do it very effectively. Now, there's a woman by the name of Cynthia Richmond. Oh, before I forget, if you want to call in and chat with me, call in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, and I'll be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. So let's say you want to win a lottery. This would be a fun experiment to do to see what would happen. Cynthia Richmond, she is someone that has researched dreaming quite a bit, and she has three steps that she recommends if you would like to win the lottery. The first step is visualizing success. She says you have to start by priming your brain to dream about the answers you want. What does she recommend? What do you do? Well, get warm and cozy in bed, and she said the last words you say to yourself before you go to sleep can make a difference, but you need to imagine yourself holding a lottery ticket, hearing the winning numbers called out to you as you check them off one by one. So you're opening up your mind to the cosmic soup. That's right. That's what I call it anyway. And then, when you're doing that, you want to ask, what are my lucky lotto numbers? And she said, as you are drifting off, now you can think it, but if you say it out loud to yourself, just very quietly, and just say, what are my lucky lotto numbers? You're going to find that the subconscious may well give you some information. And then, when you get the numbers, you've got to have a pad of paper nearby to write them down, because that's one thing about the conscious mind. It gets so busy from the time
it goes off, or if an alarm goes off, is what I meant to say. The alarm goes off, you're awake, your brain is in an action mode, and you might forget them. Now, what if you're not getting numbers? What if you're getting different details? Perhaps a pair of dice, maybe an address, a phone number. Those numbers, you need to be aware you can decode your dream. Also, she said, rosemary, the scent of rosemary, if you use, let's say, essential oils of rosemary, or you have something like fresh rosemary and you just crush it between your hands and you just have that aroma, and maybe a little bit of a bag of rosemary somewhere. But she said the fragrance absolutely stimulates the memory centers of the brain. I wonder if that would help if you when you take an exam. That might be a good thing to pass along to a college student. Have rosemary when you're going to be taking a test, that fragrance, so that it stimulates the memory sections of the brain. Good tip. I thought that I would share that bit of information with you. Oh, and let me know if you win the lottery, if any of that works. But I'll tell you what, you can also do that when it comes to wanting to know information. There are so many people that have been researchers, scientists, interestingly enough, that trained themselves, and I think Edison was one, that trained himself to go into that napping mode where you go into the twilight zone, so to speak. And he had a spoon nearby so that if he started to go into a deep sleep, that would fall off. He would have it so that his hand would touch it and it would awaken him. And then he would write down immediately whatever it was that was going on in his mind. And frequently he had resolutions to problems. In the ancient time of Greek history, there were dream temples. There were many cultures that had something like that so that you could go into that altered state and get answers to challenges that you had. Fascinating stuff. So often we think we've discovered something new when it has really been around for a long, long time, and maybe people just put it aside or records were lost about how things were done. And because, again, of our interest in technology, we're finding that there's so many things that we can do that we, well, didn't believe we were capable of doing. Believe me, there's greatness inside of you that is meant to be experienced. I wanted to share something with you. I don't know about you, but I am often looking for something that I could have as a snack that's not going to add 45 inches to the hips after it spends 30 seconds on the lips. And this is a challenge I know so many people have. And I came across a wonderful recipe, and this is the time of the year for it. Because I live in the state of Washington, we have some of the best apples in the world, and they are absolutely wonderful. This is the time of year when they have come out. October is just absolutely magical. And by golly, cinnamon sugar apple chips. When I found this recipe, I said, oh, this is terrific. Now, if you have a hydrator, you can also fix this in a hydrator. But it is absolutely wonderful. Kids would love it. You could have, you know, a batch of this, and it's hardly anything in the way of calories. Goes great with a cup of tea if you wanted it with a cup of cocoa, whatever is your pleasure, cup of coffee. But it satisfies that sweet tooth, if you will, without adding a lot of calories. So again, if you're like me and you want to monitor what you take in, so I wanted to share this with you. It's very quick, very easy, and of course, when you do this recipe, your house, your apartment is going to smell just absolutely awesome. This is how simple it is, and you can make as much as you want, but the basic recipe is 1 to 2 apples, and they need to be the crisper apples. I like the Pippin apples. I just love the John Golds, but whatever your apples are, you need maybe half a teaspoon, maybe more, depending on what you enjoy, and about a half a tablespoon of sugar. That's just for 1 to 2 crisp apples. Now, you're going to preheat your oven to 200 degrees, so it's a very moderate heat, and you want to core your apple. I wouldn't peel it. I would just core it. And then you slice the apple very, very thinly. And you want to put them in a single layer on a parchment paper-lined baking sheet. And, of course, in a little bowl, you're going to combine your cinnamon and sugar. I'd add a little bit of nutmeg. Oh, and I love the fresh nutmeg. It is absolutely wonderful. But if you don't have the fresh, use the dried. And you want to, over the apples that have been laid out on the sheet, you want to sprinkle your sugar and your seasonings that you've mixed in a little bowl. And you just put this in the oven. And you let it dry. And if you have a dehydrator, you could do the same thing. And you need to bake it until they're no longer moist. And they're nice and crisp. And you could bake these up. And, yes, it would take a while if you're going to bake up a huge batch. If you have a double oven, you've got an advantage. But this is something that is absolutely wonderful for the munchies. So I thought I would share it with you. You just put it in the oven and forget it. It's not going to burn at that low temperature. And again, the smell is just going to be heavenly. You're absolutely going to adore it. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. 627-6008. Now, tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the creative genius that is within you. Al Dalai is going to be my guest, and then Nick Redfern, a man who loves to research strange things. We're going to be going to some of the weirdest places on the planet. Lou Paradise is joining us on Thursday. Health and wellness is our conversation. What do we need to know so that we take better care of ourselves? I was sitting with a friend that I've known for so many years up here in Alaska. And like me, she's always interested in health information. And she has some health challenges. And she said, oh, Donna, I've got to share something with you that just came out publicly. It is a research that has been done on a certain level of medication for over 30 years. So on Thursday, I'm going to be sharing that with you. And it's something, it's an over-the-counter relief. And I'll tell you what, it has side effects that are not so good. So we're going to be sharing that with you. And then Dr. Kate Tulenko was going to be my guest on Friday, and she had to make a trip. So we have a very special guest, Mark Allen. We're going to be talking with him about the magical path. And you'll have to listen in on Friday to find out what that is. But, oh, his material is really good information that you can utilize should you choose to do so. And we're going to be sharing some tips on how you can empower yourself on so many levels in your own very special way. So that's our guest lineup for this week. And, oh, there's so much more that's going to be happening. I'm going to be back in my home state as of tomorrow. So we'll be broadcasting live again from the Pacific Northwest because, as I mentioned to you earlier, I'm right here in Anchorage, Alaska, where so many wonderful, wonderful things are going on. Oh, my goodness, this time of the year, the people just love to decorate up their environments. And, of course, when you're in the far north, you've got less and less daylight time. And the enthusiasm for people to bring out colorful environments is due to that. You find that you really want to be actively involved. There's just a very special feel when you're up in the far north with people. When we come back, I want you to know we've got some more good things to share. And most importantly, phone line is open, 888-627-6008, if you'd like to chat as well. Give me a buzz. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break, and we're going to be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it, and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. 859-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello, welcome back. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. We've got a caller on the line. Welcome to the show, first name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Yes, this is Catherine. I'm calling from Wilmington, North Carolina.
Well, Catherine, I'm so delighted that you're able to join us, and I want to say right off the bat that your education is going to be expanded. You are a person that is a natural storyteller. You are an individual that has a passion for communication with others. And I would encourage you, if you have not already done it, to perhaps join an environment like Toastmasters or a debate environment, a debating class in a college environment. Anything that will allow you to have what I call mental elasticity with your thinking processes. You are adept at thinking on your feet and responding to certain environments of verbal challenge. But there is another level where I'm seeing you expanding your communication skills so that you're able to shift and adapt to the thinking processes of the people that might be in front of you. Now, that may sound a bit strange, but you have this incredible ability to be able to, let's say, talk with a physicist and with that kind of thinking process that one would be inclined to have, very linear, as well as with someone that is more like childlike and very simple in the way that they see things. There is a way of using words as pictures. And I think that this skill is something that you need to capitalize on, because it's going to enable you to be in some fascinating environments of people. Now, you would really like to be an international traveler. This is something that is going to happen for you, but it is going to be a while. It is not going to be something that is going to be a regular part of your life for maybe, I'm getting 5 to 10 years. So I want you to really look at how you can expand your communication skills by entering environments that will challenge you and allow you to develop these skills, because they are golden. They are going to bless your life in so many ways, and you are going to touch the lives of many people. Not only are you a natural storyteller, but you love to teach. And I think you are not only going to enrich the lives of other people because of these skills, but it's going to be so liberating for you. And, hey, maybe you need to take up drama as well so that you can see how you can incorporate with your storytelling skills, again, that same kind of verbal adaptability that is just going to be absolutely the most positive experience in your life. And I know people used to tell you talk too much. Don't worry about that. You're going to be more sophisticated. You're going to know how to use words more effectively and more efficiently, getting across the pictures to people's minds that they really should see. I think you're an extraordinarily talented person. What would you like to ask me today?
Just at this point, I'm really in a job prospect. My company was acquired, so that's really what I'm looking for.
All right, you're looking for job prospects. In other words, the company that you're with, you are not going to be with them? They've let you go?
Not yet, but we were just acquired, so it's coming.
Well, it may not be coming. Why are you making that assumption?
Well, it's been communicated, so we're, you know, many of us are out starting to look for the next opportunity and trying to decide and if, you know, we need to actually move or if there's something we're in our area.
Well, I'll tell you what. I would like for you to do something maybe the rest of your associates have not done, but I would like you to go into the people or to someone, maybe in the human resources division, saying, I understand that because of the acquisition, there are shifts and changes, and that's fine, but I would like to know what is it that the company is wanting to orient itself towards. Don't be fatalistic about this. There might be an open door for you with this very company that is acquiring or has acquired the company that you are working with, and you may find that there's an opportunity for you to move in too. It would not be a betrayal of trust with your associates that have been there, but nobody's asking questions. Nobody's really making inquiries to see if there would be a potential opportunity to make a shift. Now, if you really don't want to stay with the company, that's something else. And I would say I would encourage you to do something that I don't know that you've done, and that is to take a vocational aptitude test and really look at your strengths. And when you're looking for a job, when you're looking at trying to find something else, you need to orient yourself towards what you really have an interest in and be willing to put yourself in environments, in a work environment that's going to allow you to cultivate your skills, because your communication skills are so good that if you're willing to do that, if you're willing to investigate your strengths, I think even if you leave this company, that you're going to be taking the steps towards developing a career that is going to be absolutely a joy in your life. But it means thinking differently. And this is something you need to be alert to. So it's really going to be up to you. But I would not just assume that you have to leave this job that you're in or the job environment. There may be an opportunity for you to move forward. But I really would encourage you, regardless of that, I would encourage you to look at what your strengths are and what environment you really would like to find yourself in, and then go after that. You march to a different drummer, and that's not a bad thing, but it is going to take some additional education. I hope that's helped you, dear.
Very much. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Catherine. Good luck to you. This is Donna Sebo. If you'd like to give me a buzz, call me at 888-627-6008. I know we're just about out of time, but I want to share something with you quickly. I think I'll be able to get it in before we go, about a woman by the name of Renata and a horse. Now, in 2005, this lovely woman was relying on guide dogs to get around, but she had had, because she lost her sight, and she's had dogs, and she would just absolutely fall in love with these animals, and then they would pass away because their lifespan is short, and she would just become so depressed. And I've known people that this has happened to. Well, she found out that miniature horses live to be about 30 years of age, and they make wonderful, wonderful guide animals. A miniature horse instead of a dog. But do you know what? She absolutely became intrigued with this. She got a horse named Angel, and it was a mini white filly. And she said, this little horse has made such a difference in my life. Now, this lady is 59 years old. She is teaching her guide horse how to let her know when she's coming to stairs or when she's coming to curbs. And she said, my horse locates my chairs for me, tells me when I'm near a door. She's being trained to pull the wheelchair for Renata. And this woman, despite being blind, she is still singing, performing with her husband, who's a very fine musician. And she said, I fight a battle every day to master the will to engage the world. What a wonderful thought for this day. Sure words are fighting a battle every day to master the will to engage the world. But what if we just shortened that and said, I will engage the world because I master my will. What do you think? Good luck to end the show on. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about discovering your genius. Won't you join me? I'd love to have you. This is Donna Sebo. Have a magnificent day or evening wherever you are. I'll be back with you, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.